Welcome to Planet Marzipan Podcast,
your fish and Marillion podcast,
where we talk about all things in the planet of Marillion and fish. I'm Meza, and here's my mate,
Craig Houston.
Hello, and welcome to another Planet Marzipan podcast. I'm Meza, and here's my mate,
Craig.
We're here this week to discuss another one of Marillion's albums, and much like last week's podcast, we've got a special guest with us. So I'd like to introduce our friend, Mikey Kay.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
I don't know you, Mikey.
Yeah.
How long have you been a fan of the band?
Oh, well, tentative, but go with me. We used to record on our Top of the Pops back in the day, and I think my musical leanings have always been pop, rock, and leaning against prog. So I was always very aware of Marillion. Clearly, Lavender obviously stuck out a mile, and Sugar Mice was my next song that I was very aware of, and then kind of wilderness happens, school, exams, blah, blah, blah. Got to know Craig, obviously, and his friend Ralph. And through them, I was nurtured. And I would say probably converted. But quite gladly so, because I was opened up into a world that was other than just pop music. And for me, Season's End was the jumping on point. But it wasn't until Holidays in Eden came about that it seriously kicked in. You know, I think between the years of 1990 and 1993 were my heady years of music. It was life-changing. It was game-changing. Gigs, getting to meet people. And Marillion allowed that to happen on a major scale. And never look back. It's been fantastic.
So what was the first year that you saw the band?
1991.
Oh, wow. Well, what a coincidence that is, isn't it?
Me and him, same gig, went up to Edinburgh 22nd of September.
But yeah. We'll talk about that later on.
We certainly will. They were the third live act I'd ever seen. Part on their Brigade tour was my first one in Edinburgh in late 1990. Then I had the Pet Shop Boys in June 91. And then Marillion in the September, so poles apart.
Yeah.
But yeah, amazing.
I'm sure
an amazing year.
Catch up boys again shortly, won't we?
Because you. Oh yes, we'll come back to them.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, that's a potted history of how we know each other and how you got into the band. So this week we're here to talk about our first Hogarth era album, Holidays
in Eden.
Yay!
So as usual, we'll start off with the Wikipedia entry for Holidays in Eden. Holidays in Eden is the sixth studio album by the British neo-progressive rock band Marillion, released in 1991. Recorded at Hook End Manor in Oxfordshire and Westside Studios in London. It was the band's second album with vocalist Steve Hogarth and the first completely written without previous lead singer Fish. Partly due to producer Christopher Neil, many of the songs feature a mainstream pop rock sound as opposed to the progressive rock of previous works. And Hogarth has described Holidays in Eden as Marillion's poppiest album ever. It reached number 7 in the UK albums chart. So that's the Wikipedia entry. As usual with this run of albums, we're going to talk about the Warner's box set in depth. So this came out in 2022. It's a 3-CD, 1 Blu-ray box set. Disc 1 contains the Stephen Taylor 2022 remix of Holidays in Eden. Disc 2 and 3 contain Live at Hammersmith, 30th 30th of September 1991. And the Blu-ray disc 4 is packed with stuff. So it's got the 2022 remix in surround and in stereo. It's got B-sides and bonus tracks. Sympathy, How Can It Hurt? A collection. Sympathy Acoustic. I Will Walk on Water alternative mix. Splinter and Heart live at Moles Club. And some Moles Club demos. You Don't Need Anyone, No One Can, The Party, This Town, Waiting to Happen. Then it's got Eric, which some of you will recognise from the Stoke Road to Ipanema.
There's also a printing error on that list there as well. Because they've missed... They've missed something off in it early on.
What is it?
Yes, well, you see, I dug out my 24-bit remaster the other day. From 98, and I was just comparing the backs because I was trying to see if there's anything new on the Blu-ray, in all honesty, and I noticed that the Cover My Eyes acoustic version wasn't listed. Now hang my head in shame here. I've only actually put the Blu-ray on to watch the documentary and the concert in Germany. Craig quite rightly checked it out, and it is there. It's just not printed on the release.
Okay, well, there we go then. And the last track on that disc is the epic Fairground Mushroom Farm demo. So quite a few of those. Well, in fact, were most of those off the...
It's a pick and lift, I think.
A lot of those are off the 98 reissue. Additional Blu-ray content is the Pain and Heaven documentary, which is about 85 minutes, another in-depth documentary. Promo videos for Cover My Eyes, No One Can, and Dryland. It's got the This Town section from Stoke Row. And then there's a gig from German TV at Rock Palast,
which is really, really nice to have. Really nice to have.
Yeah.
It's a lovely set. What do you guys make of the remix?
My thoughts are very small on this. I was going to say it sounds more layered and shiny. That sounds very...
A career in journalism awaits, Mike.
Dryland, I think, sounds amazing. I think that stands out. For some reason, I was expecting something like Splintering Heart 2, but Dryland sounds particularly nice, especially the Papa Don't Preachy string sounds to it.
Papa Don't Preachy strings. I don't know about that.
You listen to it and you...
Mikey's bringing a slightly different angle to the pop. He's bringing his pop sensibility.
I can't help myself. I like it. I just don't think it's earth-shattering, this remix. Nice, but I don't think it's made it any worse. I don't think it's... I have tried to spot massive differences. I would just say I can hear the layers better. I can hear things going on, but I don't think it's brought anything to the tip.
Yeah, I think with this, I think you're right, it's definitely layered, because I was comparing it the other night listening to the 24-bit remaster from the 90s, and that seems to have like a sharper edge to it, whereas, you know, the edges are just more harsh. This is not saying it's softer, but it's definitely more layered, and the sound kind of it's spread out more. And I mean, it helps
tracks like the title track. The title track's much better on this remix.
Yeah, I found there's a bit where you can hear a bit more Mark Kelly widdly keyboards within it. That I'd never heard before. Extra whittle.
I mean, there's some subtle differences on the stereo mix. There's a shout right at the beginning of Splintering Heart. There's a shout in one of the speakers.
Yeah,
on the original. I've got my notes from the surround mix. Have you played the surround mix, Mikey?
Well, I have to confess, no. My old surround setup that I had in my old flat got destroyed when I moved, and I've yet to set myself up a new one, but having listened to your previous podcasts, I'm kind of leaning towards spending some money very soon.
There's some great stuff on this surround mix. There really is. Just some notes from listening to it the other day. Splintering Heart has got different voices to what to the stereo mix at the beginning. The shouts in the back left-hand speaker.
Now, are you sure and you're real and they're not just in your head?
Well, I don't know.
Just check it up.
This thing in my head.
You know, you've had problems with voices before.
I have, yeah, yeah. Again, the vocal is in the centre speaker, so like all the other surround mixes, the vocal is in that centre speaker. Rob, there's some nice bits where again, like with other, some of the other mixes, where Rothers is just doing the picking and the gentle picking bits that kind of go right round all the speakers. Cover My Eyes, I've written keyboard twinkles. Keyboard twinkles.
Diddly diddly do, yeah, that new
I can't hear that. You've got a problem with Cover My Eyes, haven't you, Craig?
Yeah, it's just that keyboard twinkle that's in the first like minute or so that just it's louder on this version and it's just no.
I like it.
It doesn't fit. It's just like it's almost like stuck on. If it wasn't there, I'd be happy, but that's just me.
You can tell that it's recorded on electronic drums, this on Cover My Eyes, particularly. You tell that Ian's playing pads. There's no live drum sound at all. There's some great keyboards in the second section where Rothers is soloing over the top. Kelly's filling the back two speakers. All the keyboards are in the back, the rear speakers, with Rothers soloing over the top and the front speakers. The Party has got kind of a 12-string jangly guitar on that I've never realised before. Or No One Can, the No One Can Take You Away is, you know, the backing vocal seems multi-tracked and really much more in your face than before. As I said, Holidays in Eden is a lot, it's just a lot fuller sound, I think. Dryland, Rothers solo again in the front speakers, Mark keyboards in the rear speakers. Waiting to Happen's got a strange echo on the Something Learning to Fly section, a strange like vocal echo that I've not heard before. This Town, Rakes Progress 100 Nights, sounds fantastic. Nothing too outstanding that I've not heard before. Again, it's a really nice mix. It's nice to have. Do I like it better than the original? I think it just opens the sound up, I think. As all of these do, they're just less claustrophobic. But, you know, seeing as Craig doesn't do surrounds and you haven't got one at the minute, Mikey.
You're on your own.
But it's a nice mix. It really is. Well, you have both watched the documentary, haven't you?
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Go for it. Yeah, it's interesting that they're interspersing new stuff with the Stockport epidemic.
Yeah.
You see, age has been good to them in the long run. But is there anything actually earth-shatteringly new that we don't know from it? It's nice to see Chris Neal.
I like the documentary because the first sort of few minutes, they're sort of saying, well, this is where the problem started. You know, we had this lovely time where H had joined us for Season's End. A lot of the music was written, so we just had to put the vocal melodies and the vocal and the lyrics on top.
Andy had stuff from his booklet as well.
Yeah, he had the book and stuff from the booklet. Yeah, absolutely. But they felt, I think Mark says, they'd had an easy ride since Season's End. The fans had taken to H, which was fantastic. The album had kind of gone swimmingly. Now they were staring at a blank piece of paper. H was used to writing in a very different way, a lot quicker, because of what he'd had to do when he was in How We Live, where they couldn't record an album until the record company thought they had three songs worthy of being a single. So every week they had to go in and play these tracks. And once they got three that they felt would be good enough for an album, they'd get the green light. But that's a different sort of pressure to what the Marillion boys were used to. So he's used to working at a really fast pace, and they're used to...
Glacial.
Yeah, glacial, absolutely.
but glacial then, compared to glacial now, are two totally different things.
Well,
the glacial then is, oh my God, we've got to get an album ready in 6 months. Glacial now is 6 years from here.
Yeah. Well, you know. There's a lot of talk about Stanbridge Farm and what it was like there.
Yeah, the difference between going into somewhere like nice and residential where they could just lose themselves for like months on end and not realise how much it's actually costing.
I mean, Chris Neil does get a fair chunk of it, which is good, because I think the band were a little bit concerned about being pushed in the Michael Mechanics direction and a bit more poppy. But, you know, we'd never have got, after watching the documentary, we'd never have got Cover My Eyes in any sort of shape or form if it wasn't for Chris Neil telling them to put those two elements together. And Splintering Heart wouldn't be the fantastic opener it is now, because the version that they took to Chris Neil is the one that they played at the Moles Club, which is just the guitar version.
Yeah.
Without the electronic beginning, which really is atmospheric, isn't it?
Yeah. But the thing is with Chris Neil, also, in sad anorak fact, that he's a producer of a Bond theme as well.
Which one?
For Your Eyes Only, Machine Eddie's.
Okay. Cool. I think it's good because he says his son was a fan of the band, so he was under pressure not to cock it up, wasn't he?
Yeah. Screw this up, Dad. I'll never speak to you again.
But yeah, they sent H home for 2 weeks, didn't they?
And he came back and they'd done sod all.
He came back and I think he says in 2 weeks they'd manage the chord change. And in 2 weeks he wrote, according to one of the band, he came back with the party ready to go. So... yes, there's a lot of talk about pressure from A&R man at EMI, Nick Gatfield, who didn't really put him under too much pressure because he's a musician. So he used to be in Dex's Midnight Runners, so he kind of understood the pressures they were under.
But it was also a big kind of change in the music industry at the time, where, you know, singles were so kind of important for your album. I think the singles were even more important than the album.
Well, for a lot of artists, they were, but I think misguidingly so, because at that point, single sales had already started to slide. And if you look at the chart position, I mean, number 7 for Honey This Lead, and sort of same chart position as Season's End, so, you know, no major shift there. No. And I think, I could be right, well, it was either No One Can or No One's Covering My Eyes. I think it had top 20 placing in Netherlands. We should be, you know, Marillion's biggest hit there since Kaylee. Yeah. So it wasn't doing bad. But there was definitely a push on almost singles being more promotional tools than being a selling tool. And they were used to sell the album more than just exist as a big thing on themselves. So record companies were coming up with new ways for CDs not to be able to fit on your shelf, along with your other ones. So let's put it in a nice box. Yeah. Let's put it in a really tall box.
There's a nice wooden box.
There's a poster in there.
Well, exactly. And this one with a pin badge.
Do you want to explain what you've just held up? Because this isn't...
That was the No One Can 7-inch single box. And inside this is a nice Marillion pin badge. Pristine, untouched for years.
Decades.
Treasure these, even though they don't fit on the shelves with the rest of the products next to them. But yeah, 91, you had Eurythmics, OMD. Every single release was coming out in some new fangled way, shape or form. Fish, Something in the Air. Can you remember the...
Yeah.
Penguins?
Okay, plastic box.
Yeah. So, you know, on top of the picture discs, the clear vinyls, 10-inch singles becoming the new thing, it was just, this has got to sell, but it had to sell the album. And I think everybody probably at EMI were thinking, this needs to be, you know, better than a number 7 placing, you know. Season's End did okay for us, thanks very much, but let's get to number 3-2, you know. And I think the music landscape was quite heavy in 1991. You had some big hitters that year. Big greatest hits releases. You had Eurythmics, Queen's Greatest Hits 2, Elton John, and some, you know, a lot going on in the music industry. And I think for Marillion to get a top 10 placing in 91, surrounded by all these big selling artists, was no mean feat. And I think they did exceptionally well to do that.
That summer was dominated. That was like Guns N' Roses and Bryan Adams.
Yeah, I mean, even
that 91.
Yeah, I think the music landscape in itself was quite eclectic in 91, you know, and rock artists were selling just as well as dance artists, just as well as pop artists were. So I think it was a big fight for everybody to get good chart placings back then.
I think it was the last kind of year where you had artists like Heart and a lot of the American old school, what Mr. Kennedy would have called your hair rock. it was almost a transition time between what was like traditional rock music and then changing over to the likes of Nirvana within the next year or so.
Yeah.
Where you kind of get the grunge. So, and there was a lot of artists were kind of looking for new direction.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think really were the only ones who were looking for new direction.
No, definitely not. And I think this album stands testament to its time, really.
Do you think they've got the right mix in shorter, more commercial tracks and the balance against the longer, more prog tracks?
Well, you're talking to a pop music fan here. But I think for the time it was released, yeah. And it was nice as well to have some nice B-sides, you know. And
how could it hurt? How could it hurt? No. A collection, yes. How could it hurt? No.
Sorry,
I do what you want to. You know I do. Pardon me.
This was my gripe, actually, about the Warner's re-release, was I would have liked a fourth disc and then the Blu-ray. I would have liked everything that was on the 24-bit remaster. Not necessarily remastered, but at least republished.
Basically what they did with the Misplaced Childhood.
You've got it. your playlist, and I want everything to be at the same sound level, John. That's where this would have come in. Yeah. Minor gripe, but I would have liked that again.
I wish that they'd put You Don't Need Anyone on the album.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic song.
But didn't EMI push for that song to actually go on the album, but the band pushed back against it?
Probably, yeah.
And that was at the recording level, I think, it was before they actually got past the demo version of it.
I think, you know, when they panicked at being too poppy, that's probably the song that got pulled. But they played it at PZ quite a few years ago, didn't they?
Yeah, it was 2007.
The
family now? Yeah, the Friends family began. Yeah.
It's a great song, it really is. It should be on the album, but...
But that's a How We Live song again, isn't it? Yeah. Yes, it was a How We Live song.
Right.
That and Dryland.
Yeah, it's brilliant. What do you think of Dryland?
The album? No. The How We Live or the song?
The track.
I love it.
Dryland, it is probably my favourite song on the album.
Right, okay.
Amazing. And a shame, speaking of Dryland, that the Wheel, in its absolute glory in the 10-inch clear vinyl I'm holding up here, doesn't appear anywhere in here. You know, he's been relegated to the past.
Exactly.
Which is unfortunate, because as much as the Warner's release looks very pretty, I find some of it quite jarring in the art direction, because I'm old and I don't like change. And there's some nice band shots which were on the releases at the time, and it's nice to see, you know, some thought and some mystery put into some of the artwork surrounding the lyrics, but I think it doesn't feel right.
What about the tweet to the cover?
Well, I'm actually glad that the Meridian Holidays in Eden doesn't surround the moon and be slightly off-centre and set off my OCD anymore. What I don't like is the font at the bottom, but that's just me being picky. But it's nice to see that they've not tampered and decided to change from the original release's artwork. Back in the day, I think I actually preferred the American release artwork with the new Meridian style logo printed over the entire front cover. But it wouldn't have worked on this long box style. So it's nice to see the original artwork printed in very prettiness on the front. It's the jungle dodos and butterflies inside that don't fit for me, and I think I would have liked a bit more 91 about it and a bit less 2020.
They've tweaked all of them though, haven't they? Some more than others, as we will get when we do Season's End. I think it's nicer to be able to see the image, really. I think you can see the Sarah Ball painting clearer on this now.
I do wish they'd put the wheel image from the dry land single on it, though, because it's a really nice picture.
I mean, it does help that that's on really glossy card as well, the dry land pack, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which really elevates the picture. But overall, again, I think this is a really good package. I believe
it's still available. Yeah. Still available.
Still available, okay.
And I think it's quite reasonably priced at the moment at a certain tax dodgy emporium. It's still available at Market as well.
Even if it doesn't have the three monkeys inside it anyway.
No.
But we'll let it go.
Okay. Well, the other thing that we do when we talk about the Warners is, Craig, what do we do?
It's your favourite section.
My favourite slot?
I thought you could go there with that one.
It's just for the record. So, just a quick look at the vinyl version of the box set. It's over 4 LPs. So, it just contains the remix and then the live at Hammersmith spread across 4 albums. The packaging is slightly different to the Fish era ones. The box is just as sturdy, and the book's a great sort of 12-inch version of what you've got in that 60-page thing there. But the sleeves are more sort of generic, the inner ones. You know, the Fish ones that we've looked at, they're all sort of the same image. So the live album has got like a pink sleeve, but it's still got the Sarah Ball image on it. And then the studio record is in a blue sleeve. But they're all quite generic, so they all look the same, whereas the Fish era ones have got some nice images from the time on them. So this is slightly more plain, but it's still fantastically well produced. And it's got the whole gig across three vinyls as well. It sounds wonderful, it really does. I don't know if it's still available, though.
It is, yeah.
It is. Craig's been shopping again.
Yeah, you can get it in various emporiums where you purchase your music from.
I got mine bought as a leaving present from my last job.
And a very nice leaving present too.
Well, I was very, very, very pleased to get it, yeah. So that's the 4LP Warner's box. Very nice it is too. Again, highly recommended for you vinyl fans. And then disc 2 and 3 of the CD box have got the Live at Hammersmith on, 1991. Any views on that gig, guys?
I've listened to that quite a lot. I really like it.
Yeah. It brings a lot of memories flooding back. It really does. Just this. There's something about going to see Meridian, but there is also something about hearing Splintering Heart opening up that gig. I defy any other track that they've ever done to give me the feeling that that song does opening a gig. There'll be contenders, but that one for me, every time, it's just shivers every time.
Yeah, it's a good opener, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's a good set list from the time period, which covers, you know, Bits Are Misplaced and through very heavy on Seasons End, very heavy on Holidays in Eden. Now, that was mine and Mikey's first tour. And with being newbies, we were really, really happy that it was so weighted on the new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would have been a little out of my depth, in all fairness. Yes, I knew Seasons End. Yes, I knew Fish Era singles. But at that point, that's all I knew. And it was, honestly, fantastic times. And like Craig said, this set is, it's just, I mean, you could argue, take a collection out. I wouldn't. But it's just bang, 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 you know. And having gone to see this after the Pet Shop Boys, and there's just the whole differences between being at that gig and then going to say Marillion gig. I mean, when I lifted my feet off the floor at a Marillion gig, I moved. You know, I think it was incommunicado, actually. But literally, it was just fantastic. I mean, words can't begin to describe the feeling I had at that gig. It was just fantastic.
Well, you have got a big connection to this tour and the Pet Shop Boys tour. Because at the start of 1981, Pet Shop Boys had some visitors, didn't they?
They certainly did. And I'd forgotten about this, and then...
Until I put it in my
memory, and Craig, you know, gave me the jolt, and I was like, oh, yeah. So Pet Shop Boys performance tour program in my hand, and it's a throwaway line, but they were interviewed in February 91, 7th of, when they were doing rehearsals for their tour. And they're talking about the big bank of keyboards and live music setup that they had at the time. And Neil's line says, as such, Marillion came to look at our gear last week. We have the keyboard rack of all time. So by Marillion, I would probably imagine Steve and Mark had a big gander at the setup. But yeah, interesting. Interesting. And so that was February 91.
Very good. Nice crossover between your two favourite bands there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's always good to have a connection there.
No gig on this tour was Edinburgh, is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Edinburgh Playhouse in, was it 22nd of September 1991. We were like middle of the stalls, if I remember right. Well,
yes, we were stalls at that, yeah.
And just up to the back and left of us was Fish and his band, who'd been invited to come and see them. So that was particularly bizarre, because you're looking at the stage indicator, turns it back a little bit, go, what's he doing here?
But yes, it was, forgive me because I cannot remember the date, but it was Middlesbrough, wasn't it? The second
leg of the tour in the December.
That was it. I remember it being close to Christmas. That was the one where my feet left the floor.
Yes. It was a very, very squished standing gig.
But yeah.
Town hall.
Yeah, it was really great atmosphere. Well, they both were. You know, they were quite different because you went from Edinburgh Playhouse being a seated but everybody stood big theatre kind of gig, and to which you had to, it's bigger stage, bigger production. So you had the big Holidays in Eden backdrop, and you had the Three Wise Monkeys backdrop as well. They had the big three banners there, which the band still have. They've got them draped around racket.
Yeah.
Now, haven't they? Anytime you see the videos, you see the bits on there. And, you know, it was exciting times for my first two Marillion gigs.
I saw them in Bradford the night after the Edinburgh gig, so the 23rd of September. It was the only one I did on that leg of the tour, but at least I did get to see it. It was a great gig. Really, really enjoyed it. The acoustic section in the middle was nice. They played Holloway Girl, A Collection, and then Waiting to Happen, first half acoustic going into full band, which was a nice, slightly different thing for them to do.
Because it was the first time on a tour that they'd ever really done any acoustic stuff. Because I think we were talking before and trying to scratch our heads because we're talking about the warm-up gig at the Borderline, which they actually recorded for.
That's the album launch gig, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was, they've used those recordings there for the Dry Land single.
Yeah.
But like, see what they're saying is it's the first time that I can recall them ever actually doing any acoustic stuff as a set. I mean, obviously, you've seen them a lot earlier than we had, John.
The songs that lent themselves out, though, it worked because of the three songs they were. I think acoustic sections and gigs have their time and place, and I think to have them for the sake of having them is wrong. When they work, and I think they worked really well here.
It was a fag break for Ian, though, really, wasn't it?
I think, like Craig says, because they'd not done it before at that point, it was really different. It worked really well. It was a nice, you know, we were getting used to H being the singer. We'd had that, you know, will it be all right, won't it be all right on the Season's End tour. And those of us that were convinced were back again to see him on Holidays. It was a nice change. It was a nice change. I'm just looking now for the information. So the stuff that's on the Dry Land single, as Craig said, is the Borderline Web album launch gig, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure if there's the whole gig's there, but it's got Holloway Girl, Waiting to Happen, Easter, Sugar Mice, After Me, King of Sunset Town, and Substitute on it. Across all the versions, that is.
But you can only actually get hold of that now on streaming, isn't it? There's no retail release that have actually got those tracks on. Because it was originally on the singles box set, which you can't get anymore. Then there was like the singles, like collection, four album thing, like four disc thing, which you can't get anymore. But say, if you want to listen to them, they're available on streaming. Really, really worth checking out.
Yeah.
Well, we could have actually had five discs in the Blu-ray on here.
Yeah, you're going to be standing outside racket now, aren't you, Packard? Give me another disc. Repress it now. What do we want? This lot.
We're going to have to do an update with Lucy's response, aren't we?
Yeah. I think it'll be something with beginning with the letter T and then added what?
It'll have to be edited, yeah, without a doubt.
Just like you guys, because we knew we were going to talk about Holidays in Eden, I've dug out the front row disc, front row 10, which is from the Moles Club in Bath, 12th of December 1990. So they played a series of shows at the end of 1990. Not too many, I seem to remember.
It was all very small venues.
Yeah, all small venues. Well, this is a really clear recording that is front row 10. It's still available on
Bandcamp
as a download.
Yeah, Bandcamp.
Yeah, and Bandcamp. But it starts with Splintering Heart, but it's the guitar version. So it's the version that was used as a B-side.
On No One Can, yeah.
On No One Can. But then it goes into a version of This Town and 100 Nights that goes straight into Waiting to Happen. So at the end of 100 Nights, Mark keeps playing keys and goes straight into Waiting to Happen. It's strange. It's also got another version of This Town on. So they played This Town into Rake's Progress into 100 Nights at the beginning of the gig. And then as part of the encore, they played This Town again, but just the rocky bit at the beginning.
That kid reminds us of H at the Garage with Dinosaur thing back in 97.
One time.
Oh, no, the Fugees.
Yeah. After hearing the Fugees album 13 times, H was always going to sound fantastic, wasn't he? But yeah, I would really recommend digging this out. it's a great sort of insight into what became the album. It's got, I know we've already mentioned it, but it's got a cracking version of You Don't Need Anyone on it as well.
See, the other front row club that's interesting from the Holidays time is the, is it number 49 or something?
39.
39, is it? Oh, do you had a 43 or something, didn't sorry.
So that,
yeah, so that was the one which was the night before the opening night of the tour where they actually did a production rehearsal. So you've got the run through of the gig, which is actually slightly different because there's an extra song that they play on that that they didn't do on the tour, which was the acoustic Sugar Mice.
Six discs.
Six discs. Are we going to end it with 10 discs by the end of this?
I still buy it.
On how many versions? Honestly, you, yeah. John, and your vinyl fetishes.
Right.
Yeah, you know, both of you.
So, do you want to talk about the singles? Have we covered those off now?
Well, I would say that the interesting thing for me, and for Mike, you'll probably remember this, back in the day, we used to kind of go record hunting on a Monday morning. Two of us would be traipsing into Newcastle around every single record shop, where we used to have loads of record shops in Newcastle, looking for singles on, I think. And we knew the New Meridian single was due out, but we weren't sure exactly when it was due out. And we were kind of in HMV. We're looking at the new single releases. And Klopp covered my eyes and didn't actually realise it was a Marillion single straight away until he actually read Maril. Oh, it's the new single. What the hell? What's this artwork? Because it was such a radical change. I liked it from the beginning.
I remember that day vividly because it was literally, it smacked you around the chops from the shelf. It was different. But like Chris said, we had no idea what it was. We just gravitated towards it. Obviously, back in the day before we'd joined the web and there was no such thing as the interweb, you had to find these things out by either music press or by turning up at your local record shop. And there it was in a box that didn't fit with the rest of my CDs on the shelf. And start of a great, great time, Marillion. Yeah, fantastic.
And I think it was it when they were on Top of the Pops? Was it the week after when the single had came in at like 34, whatever it was?
It was 34.
And it was, I think that was the last time they were actually on the British Top of the Pops.
Well, this is strange as well because they appeared before it charted at 34. So they were lucky to get on the Pops.
Yeah. And the thing is, I don't think we've forgiven Top of the Pops 2 either. Remember when there was the vote a number of years ago for the best ever performance on Top of the Pops? And as usual, Marillion fans, they piled on and we got Top of the Pop, got Cover My Eyes on the Top of the Pops. And they actually called it on the banner, Cover My Heart. What? Who, where, what, why?
I thought you were going to say something else there for a minute.
Yeah.
I'm not being Mark Kennedy and called it Butter My Thighs. No, I'm not going there. But could you imagine, like, if it had been, like, Queen and they called it Bohemian Rape Seed or something like that? You know, there'd be pitchforks.
Choose your words.
there'd be pitchforks and flaming torches, but it's Marillion. Yeah. Who gives it? I don't know. Who cares?
But we're not bitter.
But we're not bitter.
No,
then,
not sure.
Then they were had No One Can, which was the Great White Hope, with the nice animated or semi-animated video of H looking all kind of like simpering for the girls.
Very MTV friendly and very of its time.
Yeah, and it had Simon Cowell's girlfriend at the time was the young lady in that. And then that video, the animation and stuff, was then cribbed for another single. I thought it was about a year later, that song called Dolphins Make Me Cry. So it was basically...
Martin Joseph.
Yeah, so it was basically the No One Can video repurposed.
Nothing wrong with Martin Joseph.
I'm saying nothing. It was just repurposed.
And so you see, we got that charted at like 36 or something, went up to 33, down to 39. I just vaguely remember in here. So it never had the chance because EMI diverted the money away from it and never pushed the single. So it didn't become the behemoth that EMI were hoping that the fan base would just make it. And then we had Dry Land after that, which was poor Mr. H dumped on a glacier and said, find your own way home, see you later, we haven't got enough money to pick you back up again. Took it 3 years to hitchhike back. That's why we didn't get brave for so long.
When we talked about the artwork, so the American version of the album was on IRS, wasn't it?
Yes.
And it had a different running order.
Bizarrely.
So the album starts with Cover My Eyes. Then it has a track called, and I quote, No One Can Take You Away From Me. Then it's A Splintering Heart, The Party. Then you've got a collection on there, Holidays in Eden. Then you've got Mikey's favourite, How Can It Hurt? What a banger. Then Dry Land, Waiting to Happen, This Town, Rake's Progress, 100 Nights. So it's a slightly tweaked order. I cannot understand not starting the album with Splintering Heart.
Yeah, it's a bit bizarre. I remember getting that on import from, was it Spin Discs on Highbridge Street?
Yes, you got it from Spin Disc.
Yeah, because later on I got the American Fisher's Internal Exile as well.
You did?
A meticulously big package.
Well, you gave me a long box, did you?
Yeah, I got the long box.
But how got him?
So what?
When I moved house, all my CDs and everything were boxed up, and they're still all boxed up in the cabbage.
I don't know if I'm going to throw it all. You've got to take them out and caress them and look at them and nurture them, Craig.
Well, the back
not down. Box them away.
Sam, I think, I'm mad enough as it is in any case. If I start to... Should think I've completely got off the edge.
So it was a big album for you guys then, wasn't it?
Massive. Absolutely massive. And there was just the whole... I think it's because we were like 18 at the time. And, you know, it was a big release for us. And it just... Still love it now. You know, it's one of those things that a lot of people say, oh, it was too poppy and it was this. It had a great balance. It still has a great balance. I mean, look at how much of it they actually still play live now.
It's got the... Well, it's the first time we've talked about it on a podcast, but it's got the first H moment. You know what I mean by a H moment?
Are you talking about the end of 100 Nights?
I am.
I thought it was. Then yes, it's got a great H moment. Consider that, could say that's what it is, yeah.
That's the H moment of this album.
Yeah.
You didn't notice me as I passed you on the stairs, all of that at the end.
Goosebumps. You're
amazing.
Yeah.
Goosebumps. Gives you the kind of, it's almost like a precursor in epicness to the likes of The Great Escape.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's brilliant. I mean, we'll talk about it when we do Season's End, but the space is the H moment on Season's End for me. But
overblown guff, love it.
I love it, yeah. This is overblown guff, Craig.
Oh, yeah.
I think completely. I did say that in the last episode.
Yeah, like, completely. Completely. Yeah. But I know, talking about the live gigs, and one thing I bet I kind of mention, otherwise she'll kind of slap us around the chops. Pam Tate, great friend of ours, happened to remind me, because she went to the Middlesbrough Town Hall gig with us, so there was me and Doug, my brother-in-law, and Claire, her girlfriend at the time, and Mikey, and Pam all crammed into his car down to Middlesbrough. And to keep going about, it's one of our earliest gigs and things like that. And she just happens to keep reminding us, even though she's actually slightly younger than us, that she saw Marillion at the Milton Keynes Bowl with Status Quo, with her family. By 1984, so she reminds us that she got in there first.
Well, there you go.
And if the shoe was on the other foot, so would you.
Oh, yeah.
I have to mention one song on this album because it is mine and my good lady's song, which is waiting to happen. Since we first said it's always been our song, so I think it's a beautiful, beautiful love song, and it is blended in my song, so I have to mention that.
As a cry way to a cracking version of that on All One tonight, isn't there, from Royal Albert Hall?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's one of those albums that I can literally start to finish every time. No skips, no ifs, ands, or buts, all the way through. Just not a dull moment.
Brilliant.
I can do the same, but I'm going to be slightly kind of against the grain there. And there's one song on there that's never been a favourite of mine. And I hate to say it's The Party. There's just...
I know. You never got invited to any, did you? That's why.
Oh, yeah. No.
The Party on there, on the Bowls Club, is really rocky in the middle. It's a slightly extended version. It's really good.
But I'd even prefer Holidays in Eden over The Party.
Oh, steady now.
So I can hang my head in shame. And it's just
gone too far.
I don't think I can talk to you now.
No, that's it. Well, we've just dethroned Craig.
Are we going to mention the re-release then of No One Can?
Oh, that's from,
I mean, did Marty too, didn't it?
Yeah, it got 26 of them, didn't it?
Yeah.
That was part of the Six of One campaign, wasn't it?
You've got that in front of you there. Is the Mike Stone remix on that and the No One Can reissue?
Well, yeah, that's why I kind of brought it up, because it's a nice remix of Cover My Eyes, and
oh, it's
that
went
on here either.
The Mike Stone remix of Cover My Eyes, the one thing you've got to watch out for, if you play that at any kind of volume, your double glazed rattles, it turns the drums up to like, it goes past 11. And the guitar, it's a really cracking version of Cover My Eyes. It really is. It's a go-to rocker.
Are you missing that on the box then? Is that what disc are we on now, Mikey?
It's
it's weirdly, it's not even on the 98 reissue, is it?
No, it's not.
No, they've forgotten all about it.
But it's on the on your singles. It's on the singles and on the single set, though, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, we're not really going to talk about Six of One, because I think we'll do a separate pod on Six of One. But these two eras do kind of overlap, don't they?
They do, because, I mean, you're only talking, you're from the start of the tour of Holidays in the UK. It was like September 91. And then the 10th anniversary gig at Wembley was September 92.
So, yeah, well, give that its own podcast, I think.
Yeah, I think we'll get people involved in it. Were you at Wembley?
Yeah. Okay, well, look, thank you very much, guys. Some fantastic reminiscing there. Mikey looks 10 years younger than he did at the start of the podcast.
And I now feel 10 years older.
Thank you for sharing your memories with us. I think it's great to talk through these times. Sounds like a really exciting time for you two guys. We didn't know each other then, so... You'd still had a pretty normal life for another 3 years, I think, at this point.
There's no such thing as normal.
Any final thoughts?
The campaign starts now for the 8 disc version. The fun of this leading.
Yeah. You could go on forever with this release, I think. And they had to draw a line in the sand somewhere. It's a shame that a few things are relegated to Blu-ray level. You know, it would have been nice to have Sympathy as well on a CD, but fantastic release all the same. Let's make it 6 discs next time.
When we get the 2030 remix, it'll be a six disc set, Mikey, for you.
It'll have to be in mono for me by then, because I'll only be listening through one ear.
Okay, look, thanks very much, guys. It's good to talk to you both, and thanks for listening, people. We will see you next time for the next Planet Marzipan. It's good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
And it's good night from both of them.
Take care.
Stay alive.
Be good.
Thanks for listening to Planet Marzipan Podcast. Please like and subscribe from whichever platform you get your podcasts from. You can contact us at planetmarzipanpodcast@gmail.com and check out marillion.com, fishmusic.scot or fishmusic.eu for all the good stuff.